And of course, Linda Moulton Howe with us, Conversations with Linda. We take your questions, your stories next. Linda, you're talking about the Arctic freeze, 16 deaths so far in the Midwest with this thing. What a horrible thing.
It's terrible, and you know that animals have suffered.
Yes.
There
was a story of a guy who left his dog outside.
How could you do that?
I know it. And they arrested him. They charged him with the animal cruelty.
And the animal died, I assume.
Probably.
Oh, my gosh. This thing that we're dealing with is everything seems to be in bigger swings of the pendulum, and that has what the computer said would happen in a global warming world, that there would be things like the polar vortex, and there's physical reasons for why, having to do with the upper atmosphere, although related to a general trend of warming, and it has been in the computer for going all the way back to when I was doing all the medical programming for the ABC station in Boston. That was in the end of the 70s, and I interviewed one of the Harvard scientists who back then was one of the very first to start doing calculations on carbon dioxide and methane increase in then the 20th century. And they didn't have the computers that they have today, but I remember doing an interview with him and how sober he was in his Harvard office, saying that if we are continuing on the path that we were then in the 70s, that by the time we got into the 21st century, and there were predictions then, and it's amazing to me, remembering that interview, how much today is like what the computer even then, with crude computer projections, that it was very similar. And it's almost a bigger question. Why does humanity always have to go through learning everything the hard way?
Well, it always does, doesn't it? It seems to be. Any conferences coming up for you?
Yes,
soon.
Conscious Life Expo.
I'll see you there.
Yes, it's in, what is this now? It's the third weekend from...
A couple more
we're
weeks,
going to
yeah.
be this weekend, and then it's 3 weeks into February,
yes,
right?
I think it's right toward the end of February.
Yeah, and I'm doing work in the beginning of February with Ancient Aliens on some really fascinating stories, and so for those who ask me all the time, yes, Ancient Aliens is going forward. We're in the 12th season. We're doing more exciting things this year. And then Conscious Life Expo, I love that. It's kind of one of those where it doesn't remind you of being on a really busy New York City street that LA.
I love it.
Hilton. Yeah, it's vertical and a thousand things are happening all at once. And I think it's one of the more fun conferences.
And we've got Contact in the Desert coming up for me.
That's right. And on Conscious Life Expo, you and I and others were on a cool UFO panel together.
Yep, we sure are. Are you going to be on this one? Who knows what they've got stacked up for us?
Well, at Conscious Life, I know I am. I'm with you on that one, so I'm looking forward to it.
Okay, let's go to the phones now. They line up. Thomas in La Jolla. Hey, Thomas.
Hi, George. Thank you for taking my call, and I want to thank you, your staff, and above all, the audience.
You're too kind, Thomas. Thank you.
I mean, thank you. It's just a miracle, 7 nights a week. And Linda, you do such magnificent research. Thank you.
Thank you.
And I think the Coast audience was also very appreciative. I'm going to build upon, 50 years ago this year, we had the Apollo moon missions. 25 years ago this month, in February of 1994, there was Project Clementine, known as the Clementine Project.
Right.
It was a satellite not sponsored by NASA. It was sponsored by the Department of Defense Strategic Defense Initiative.
Right. I talked about it with Dr. Shoemaker. He was the geologist who was overseeing what that Clementine was going to do on the moon. And I had a fascinating interview with him in Baltimore. It was so interesting that we had Clementine, and then remember all of those pieces of an asteroid that came in and hit Jupiter?
Yes.
And I was in Baltimore at the university where he and a bunch of geophysicists and others had come in. They were planetary scientists, and they were doing a presentation on what could happen when these asteroid pieces hit Jupiter.
Was that the Shoemaker from Shoemaker Levy?
That's right.
Okay.
And I was sitting next to Levy and his mom.
Gene Shoemaker was his
name.
Yeah.
And Dr. Shoemaker and I ended up at that presentation and that live event with the impact on Jupiter talking about Clementine. And I asked him, I said, weren't you going to photograph like every square inch of the moon and present it publicly? Because that was the original description of what Clementine was going to do, and that it was going to go out to a very peculiar shaped asteroid and take photographs of it also. And here it was where something strange. He had been jovial. He had been happy. Everything was, it was, we had broken open bottles of champagne because that was such a huge event. The asteroid going into Jupiter and being able to get some photographs. And when I ask him that question about, isn't Clementine supposed to show us every square inch of the moon, especially the back? He became visibly nervous. His voice lowered. He became clipped. And I knew immediately, well, there's something here that's being hidden. And then the tragedy of his death. He was on a road in a car in Alice Springs down in Pine Gap in Australia.
Oh, head-on collision.
How in the name of could there have been a head-on collision with that wonderful scientist in that remote rural area? I've never believed. I just can't not believe. And I've often wondered that day when I asked him about the photographs on the backside of the moon and he became so nervous, I think he knew that there was an alien base. He knew that we knew that there was an alien presence on the moon and on Mars and on the Earth. I asked him other questions and he became even more nervous and agitated, and he was a wonderful person. And I have always wondered, was he taken out because he knew so much?
Maybe. His ashes, of course, were put on the moon by the lunar prospector. He's the only person whose ashes are on a celestial body outside of the planet.
I think he knew a lot about this.
I didn't know you knew him that well.
Well, in the sense of being at a conference and talking with him in that way that you do with people when you're bonded by something exciting, like this asteroid, these pieces colliding into Jupiter, and I have been sitting next to the other Levi and his mom, and where everybody, I was a reporter, and there were reporters mixed up with the scientists, and it was just, I remember that day, it was the way you wish the world were. No secrets, everything that's possible to learn, and you're all talking, and you are enjoying the intellectual stimulation. It was just, oh, God, it was so fun. That's why it stood out so dramatically, because we had all been so wonderfully, everybody was so warm and happy and having champagne. So for me to see him completely change 180 degrees, when I, as a reporter, asked him, wasn't Clementine supposed to photograph every inch of the moon and that we should be seeing the backside of the moon? That's why I was asking, where are the photos of the backside of the moon? His visible nervousness and shutdown has to be related to the fact that there is by every account that I've ever heard from anybody who should know, there is an alien or several bases on the backside of the moon and on the inside of the moon. And abductees going back to the 70s. Remember the Brian Scott case?
Yep.
I talked with Brian Fraser, who took Brian Scott down to Peru to go to the Gate of the Sun, where he turned into this Voltar character. And up until that time, Brian Scott, as Brian Scott, had, even in his home, he had done these weird voices, and Thelma Moss at the University of California was studying him, and there was a lot of interest in Brian Scott. Well, they go to Peru, and Brian Fraser, who got him down to Peru and who kept in touch with me both before and after that trip, said that one of the most, I guess, vivid, now, we just went through an abductee who is getting telepathy, is coming in dreams, organic being in his house, the abductions when he was a child, and then in the park. I mean, that, talk about a lot of physical interaction. Well, Brian Scott had a lot of physical interaction, and somehow, because Brian Fraser, I still have huge notebooks that he brought to me and said, Linda, you have to go to Peru. That's why I went to Peru and spent a month. He brought all these notebooks with all of these drawings from Brian Scott, and he said, Brian has been shown the computers that are on the inside of the moon, that the moon is a machine. It was placed exactly where it is, that there are aliens who have been controlling the Earth, the solar system, interactions with the sun, and all of these things. And that was in the 1970s with Brian Scott. Today, what hardly anybody could relate to then, I think it's true.
It's an amazing story. And you remember the late remote viewer Ingo Swann, in his book Penetration, wrote about structures on the far side of the moon that he saw in his remote viewing sessions.
That's right. And I think in talking with Ingo privately that I talked to him about Brian Scott, because there was a period of time when I was working in New York, and I got together with Ingo and some of his friends often to talk about remote viewing, and that I believe that it was at his place where he lived in New York, and we had notebooks and remote viewing notebooks, and I think he told me that he had remote viewed computers inside of the moon. And that's how we got to talking about Brian Scott.
Amazing. Let's go to Terry in Modesto, California now, west of the Rockies. Hello, Terry.
Hi. Yes, thanks for taking my call.
You're welcome.
Linda, I'd like to say thank you very much for studying some on this kind of an illness, because this is something I can't get anyone to believe.
What happened?
Well, I was stationed at Camp Lejeune, North Carolina back in the 50s. And I did teletype. It's something similar to amnesia. But what it's called, I don't know. I can find no one to study it.
You mean that you feel that you were working in teletype? Did you have a clearance to be downloading something that might have been sensitive? And then after you did that you found that something happened and you couldn't remember things?
All I really know is, it's on record, one day I went into the cafeteria, I don't remember a bit of this, with my shoes on the wrong feet, my clothes on backwards. That is on record.
Now, how are you now, years later?
The last one I had was in June of 2015.
You have these episodes, you mean?
Yes, I was out from June 9th to June 15th. And while I was out, I saw a doctor at the emergency room at Kaiser Hospital. He saw nothing at all wrong, and they released me that night. I'm supposed to have come to my home, gone inside my home, talked to people near me, and they said that my speech was a little bit different, but that was all. But I can get no one to halfway believe it.
What do you think has happened to you?
Teletype. In some way or another, because UFOs were out. I, the LSD medicine had just come out back in the 50s.
They put you on that?
I do not know what kind of medicine, but one doctor said possibly it was LSD.
Well, one of the things about our past history, and I've been doing a tremendous amount of research about that and reporting, is MKUltra. And that was officially sanctioned by the CIA in 1953. And it had goals to learn how to have controlled amnesia so that you could erase the memories of people who were getting highly classified information. And then you would be able to control their minds so that they would forget it. And that there were so many things that were happening from 53 on. And if you were working in, was it a military capacity or Western Union?
Yes. No, it was at Camp Lejeune, North Carolina. It was military.
Okay. In a military capacity, probably what the MKUltra CIA research was doing was focusing in military units, because once you sign on and you're working in the military, you're taking orders from the Department of Defense, and that is easier than to control and do that kind of research than it would be on a civilian population, even though I think they did that as well. But you may have been one of the side victims, whether anybody had any intent. Here, I'll just boil it all down. If they were trying to use frequencies, which I understood they were, and they were trying to find frequencies in which they could manipulate amnesia, that's one goal, implanting new memories, that's a second goal, using sound to trigger, this is the Manchurian Candidate kind of thing, that's a third goal. Any and all of those in the 50s to the 60s, it was all experimentation. This was, in a strange way, if you had been playing with, let's say, a coral snake with a bunch of kids, it's sort of similar, because you don't know what's going to happen.
They erased her, didn't they?
Well, this is the question. Could she be one of the innocent victims of ignorance? It was a time of ignorance and experimentation. And they finally learned enough and a lot that I think that on the John Levine character and others, where does manipulation through a program like MKUltra and being able to control amnesia and lay down false memories and all of it? We know it has happened. It has happened over and over and over again in spades.
She must have seen something, Linda, that came over that teletype machine.
Maybe. And that's the problem. How do you ever prove the absence of knowledge?
You can't. Linda, stay with us. We're going to come back in just a moment here on Coast to Coast AM. And take final phone calls, conversations with Linda. Those of you on hold, we will do our best to get you all. Linda's website, earthfiles.com. Send her an email every once in a while at earthfiles@earthfiles.com. Tomorrow on Coast to Coast, we're going to have some spooky interviews for a couple hours and then special open lines for you right here on Coast to Coast AM. You can email me at george@coasttocoastam.com. And welcome back. Our final segment with Linda Moulton Howe. So let's go right to the phones. We'll go to Sven in Edgewood, Washington. First time caller. Hello, Sven. Thanks for calling.
Hi. Thank you.
Sure thing.
And this is a great honor.
Hello.
Hi, Linda. This is an incredible honor. I've just been a UFO enthusiast all my life, and my regards to Chocolate and Fluffy, and congratulations on your podcast. And let me be quick otherwise.
Thank you.
Okay. One thing I could add to the database of things is back in 2007, I witnessed a giant black triangle really close up. I was walking up. It was dark, about December, not too late. So it was kind of the dark blue sky. This is the Northwest. So I was walking up to the laundromat with a in this apartment complex, a basket of clothes. And I heard this low thrumming mixed with another weird sound. I thought, is that coming from the laundromat? And about then, you know, I looked up, and I'll just say this was the strange part. I looked up, and right then, you know, like Star Wars, just the giant point of this craft started moving overhead, you know, maybe 300-500 feet up, as big as a football field, like they would say.
Right.
And, but I kept looking forward, you know, I just looked back down again, kept walking towards the laundromat. And then I kind of overcame that and said, you know, that's not right, you know, and looked up and was, wow. And to describe it, you know, it was what they usually describe, giant black. I couldn't really see a detail of rivets or panels, but the giant dome white lights at each corner of it.
Was that, it at night or?
Excuse me?
Was it nighttime, Sven?
Was it at nighttime?
Yeah, it was nighttime, but like around 7 o'clock, and it was like in early December, and this is back in like 2007 now. I fully expected these to be revealed by now, but, you know, then I study about them all the time.
Well, if you go to my earthfiles.com report, that is part one, you will see that at the... what would be after the interview with Terry Loveless, I have a section that I call Huge Silent Triangular UFOs Described in a Whistleblower Leak Psalm 101 Majestic 12 Group Special Operations Manual entitled Extraterrestrial Entities and Technology Recovery and Disposal, Top Secret Magic Eyes Only, printed in 1954 by the U.S. Government Printing Office in Washington, D.C. This is one of the most important whistleblower leaks, I think, of all time. And Bob Wood and his son and others think the same thing. And in paragraph 9, description of craft, in this book that we've even been able to talk to the man who was printing in 1954, they got a brand new printing press. And they were still using the War Office logo on what they were printing, not the DOD. And that person who was working at the printing press in Washington, D.C., remembered printing this. And it is a training manual about how to retrieve extraterrestrial entities and technology. And on paragraph 9, description of craft, you go down to subsection D, airfoil or triangular shape. This is a 1954 printing. This craft is believed to be new technology due to the rarity and recency of the observations. Radar indicates an isosceles triangle profile, the longest side being nearly 300 feet in length. Clearly, in the last 20 years, there have been some that are 2 miles long. I'm convinced of that by the witnesses and what they have compared them to. But they're talking about 300 feet back in 54. Little is known about the performance of these craft due to the rarity of good sightings, but they are believed capable of high speeds and abrupt maneuvers similar to or exceeding the performance attributed to types A and C, and A and C were disc shape and oval. And so that, to me, Bob Wood and I and Ryan Wood and others, we are convinced this is legitimate, this is real information, and that means that this huge triangle was known, even sketched, in this training manual for a 1954 printing.
Let's go next to our wild card line, Nero in North Carolina, truck driving. Hi, Nero.
Good morning, George. Good morning, Linda.
Hi there.
How are you?
Good.
Thank you for taking my call. The implants, it's kind of hard to fathom. Like, I guess they put this in us and we're supposedly, I guess, cattle, like how we tag cattle, cook cows and stuff.
Well, I guess that's one analogy. It depends upon what the agenda is. if in fact the big box that we were talking about an hour ago, that the soul itself, that unfortunately today in the 21st century Western civilization, the soul is sort of categorized for a lot of people like Valentines and things that are mythical, when the soul, I am convinced, is the most important part of us, and that we are living in a civilization that is basically upside down. Everything is matter and money and the obsession with obsessions with having possessions, and that the true nature of what this earth could be and should be in terms of a human civilization in which the soul is there and may not be in other beings in this universe, and that somehow we have come to the 21st century in which what is it that dominates planet Earth now? It is everything negative. It is entropy. It is war. It is weather that may end up destroying a large part of the planet. And if in the past 2,000 years, we had really been living a truth for what the reality of it all was, and that there are beings in this universe that are jealous of Homo sapiens sapien because of these extraordinary souls, what a very different story to be dealing with than are we going to be eaten by hostile ETs?
Next up, we've got Mike, Daytona Beach, Florida. Michael, go ahead, sir.
Hey, George, great show tonight.
Thank you, really, Mike.
Really agree with what Linda just said about the soul, too. Linda,
thank
awesome.
You.
Been wanting to talk to you since my daughter had a dream 24 years ago. She was 4 years old, and when she got up in the morning, she told me, Daddy, I had a dream, and I said, tell me about it. And she said, well, there was a bright light in her dream. She saw this bright light outside. And when the guy came through the wall, and he looked like he was tall and skinny, mm-hmm. and he had big eyes, she described what I see as an alien.
Mm-hmm.
And
wow.
He came through the wall, picked her up, carried her out the door. Such a strange dream, but I've always wanted to tell you this ever since I've been listening to you.
And what has been the evolution of your daughter since then?
I can't. She doesn't remember it. She remembers me talking about it, but she told me this dream, and she went out the door, and the guy carried her out the door, down the street, and around the corner, and the bright light was down the street at a friend's house. And this is like 100 yards from my house, where I'm standing right now. And she remembers him coming back. He carried her through the door, put her in her bed, and then went back out the wall. And then the light disappeared.
Jeez.
That's what she remembered. It was so crazy. And
well,
I always wanted to tell you that story.
Well, thank you very much. And let me tell you what, at least in the vast majority of the cases that I have done deep interviews with, it is so common that within 2 weeks of any kind of physical interaction, there will be one or more vivid dreams, as if the phenomena itself wants there to be some kind of communication in human existence, and that it could be that it is the non-humans that provoke this, or it could be that the human brain itself has to go through a process of trying to analyze and fit what has occurred. But in these vivid dreams, most of the time, an explanation for what is going on comes out of those dreams. And people will see again what it was that was interacting. And a lot of telepathic download will occur, hieroglyphs, symbols that carry meaning. That's why I'm wondering if your daughter ever had a very vivid dream that might explain what was happening.
Yeah, but at such an age, 4 years old, how would they know, Linda? Huh?
No, later.
Even later.
What is her age today?
Yeah, she's got to be in her 20s now. Let's go.
Is he gone?
Yeah.
Well, if he's listening, email me about the age of your daughter now, and perhaps you could ask her if she has had very vivid dreams. Usually people don't talk about these with anybody, but for somebody like me, it is the vivid dream that often carries the most important information for anybody who is listening now to Coast. This is true. And so there can be a physical event, or it can seem like a dream, but then there will come this vivid dream that is exactly the same kind of consciousness as you are right now listening to the radio. It is like beta consciousness, but in that vivid dream will be the information that begins to unlock what has happened. So in this case, if the father is listening, how old is your daughter now, and did she ever have any series of vivid dreams that might explain what has happened?
Let's go to Brian in Indianapolis. Hey, Brian, is it warming up a little bit for you?
Yeah, it's like 15, 16 degrees.
All right, a warm front coming in.
We got about 3 inches of snow, though.
Jeez.
Hey, I got my ticket.
So dry that you could blow it away, right?
It is. Hey, listen, I got wife and I bought our tickets for Columbus today real quick.
Oh, great.
The show.
Great.
Hey,
look forward
Linda,
to seeing you.
Yes.
A couple of days ago, I asked Nick Pope about on the religious side of the fallout when we have full total disclosure of ancient aliens. And the wife and I are religious ancient alien series watchers.
Right.
My question to you, though, on the other side is, why is our federal government so hesitant, or why is it so difficult for them or any other world government to come out and just say, hey, look, this is what's going on. You're talking about space trade going on. Why is it so difficult for them to think that we can't handle the truth?
I agree with you.
George, and I'll see you in May.
Okay,
yeah,
Brian.
Oh, thank you.
Go ahead, Linda.
I think the reason I work so hard is that I cannot believe that we are still on a planet that is so concocted. It is nothing but lies. Everything that we have been taught is upside down and backwards, and that there's something really important, maybe at the soul level, of having this crack open. All of it, the good, the bad, the indifferent, crack it all open, revolutionize our whole relationship to ourselves and to the universe and what the truth is. Now, it is a very interesting question. Why would the power brokers and the governments of Earth since World War II have remained silent while their highest priority in back engineering study, everything has been alien technology. It is not a question. This is not a hypothesis. This is the reality. This is what has been happening on this planet. And I believe when Lynn Buchanan says that we are in interstellar roots. Well, for our planet of humanity to be left in the dark constantly makes us so vulnerable, and we are manipulated, and that question, why is it that all of the governments of the world cannot tell the truth, makes me nervous because...
And angry.
Well, because who is in control of the power brokers of our planet that constantly lie?
The deep state. Somebody's controlling the puppet master strings, huh?
Don't you think that 2 + 2 = 4?
You would think so.
Yeah, and that then implies that something with its own self-serving interest continues to manipulate this planet, not in a good way. I don't think if you step back and you look at the 7.5 billion people on Earth and you ask the question, does this planet serve humanity? The answer would be no. Humanity is serving something else.
And we'll get that answer one day. Linda, thank you again. We'll talk to you the end of February, okay?
Yeah, see you at Hilton LAX, and where it's always a lot of fun, and I hope a lot of our listeners are there and come up and shake hands, and we'll have more conversation.
You got it. Linda Moulton Howe, great investigative reporter. Her website, earthfiles@earthfiles.com. That's her email. Our website is earthfiles.com. Saturday, Richard Serrett will be hosting the program for you. And, of course, I'll be here tomorrow with Open Lines, and then I'll be here Sunday on Super Bowl Sunday for you. For Dan Galante, Tom Danheiser, Lisa Lyon, Lex Lonehood, Sean LaDesur, Stephanie Smith, Chris Borles, Tim Banal, and George Knapp, I'm George Norrie somewhere out there on Coast to Coast AM. We'll see you on our next edition. Until then, be safe, everyone.